This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is Eddie Caruso. Eddie's been working for our family business for 28 years. And he's just now wiping the sleep out of his eyes. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good.
All righty. First of all, you had a comment right off the bat on your way here.
Yeah, well, there was no sleep in my eyes because my travel here is 30 miles one way.
Okay.
And so
okay.
I was wide awake. But I was astonished by the number of different plates from different states that I saw on my way in today. I'm talking Canada, Alaska, Pennsylvania, Florida, California, North Carolina, New York.
You can understand why they're coming here, don't you?
Oh, yeah. This time of year, Phoenix is just the place to be. The weather is wonderful.
Yep. This is the time of year my horses like it down here. They do not like it from April to October, but from October to April, this is the place to be. My horses have a better life than you and I have.
Well, that's because they have horse sense.
Yeah. But it's they are the epitome of a winter visitor. Because that's exactly what they do. They go up north during the summertime when it's a whole lot better. The last couple of mornings up at the ranch have been between 10 and 19 degrees.
That is cold.
And you get up in the morning and you say to yourself, do you suppose they can wait for another hour till the sun comes up before I have to go out and feed them?
Yeah,
you
start shoveling hay.
Oh, yeah, it's not bad, though. You feed them flakes off of it, and I have a cart, and I have the cart already out there, and it's just outside the fence where they can't chew on the hay, and I go out there and throw a couple flakes into the feeder and usually have a hot cup of coffee and walk back. Anyway, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. They're dedicated to providing the best service possible and getting the job done right the first time. At Strictly Diesel and Repair, they are die-hard service, repair, and parts diesel people. They work on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and they're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and they're available 24/7 on their website, and they sell parts online on their website. So if you're looking for something fancy for your diesel, it would be worth checking out Strictly Diesel and Repair.
Willis is your first caller, Willis.
And they're a good shop, and they're on my best car repair shops list. Let's go to Willis real quick. Willis, good morning to you.
Hello there, Mark.
Go right ahead, sir.
Okay, you know what? I have a 2005 Altima, and during the winter months, the shift from first to second gear is a little harsh, but that's not the case in the summer. Should I be concerned?
Boy, that's a tough one.
Is it just, let's say, the first one, two shifts before the vehicle is warmed up?
Yeah, after I drive maybe 10 miles, then it smooths out.
And how many miles are on it?
140,000.
Have you ever had the transmission serviced at all?
The only thing I've had done is transmission fluid changed every year.
Okay. Do you know that if they're pulling the pan and changing the filter in 3 or 4 quarts, or are they flushing out all the fluid and putting new fluid in it?
No. I think they changed the gasket and the filter.
Okay.
And that's about it. But they're not flushing. And they claim that a car that old may create some problems if you flush it.
Okay. I don't agree with that.
Nor do I.
It's an old wives' tale that came around in the 60s and the 70s when we had a much different fluid, I might tell you. And the idea was, is if you brought your car in and it had all kinds of problems, then the story was back there, and we were kids back then, so we heard it from the guys we worked
right.
for, that if we put new fluid in it, it would cause everything to deteriorate and all the seals to collapse and all the dirt to be rejuvenated, and you'd have the bugs that came alive and your transmission would fail, right?
That's what they told us, yeah. Because you're basically, you're flushing out all the material that's keeping the transmission together.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
No.
That's not true. But I don't know that I'd be servicing this transmission every year. I think that might be a waste of money.
It depends on how many miles he's driving. But, yeah, that's typically we go once every other year, maybe on a...
Well, it depends on what the owner's manual says. But I agree that 30,000 is a comfort zone on the older cars.
Yes.
But the newer cars are going, what, 90 to 100
yeah,
without service?
A lot of them, they quote, they're sealed for life.
Right. But they also have a real high-dollar synthetic fluid in the newer ones.
Right.
But to his problem, I don't think with the service interval he's got, with the mileage he's got, I don't think that anything should be done.
I agree with you. And there's two ways to look at it, I guess. It depends how severe that shift is. If it's annoying or if it's like... someone rear-ended you if it's that harsh.
Yeah.
But I really don't think it's going to be a problem, because typically when there's problems with the seals inside the transmission, it's the opposite. It's when it's cold, you put it in gear and nothing happens for 5 seconds.
It's slushy and slips.
Right. And then once everything warms up and the seals expand, then it acts normal. So it may be annoying, but I really don't think at this point that I would do anything with it.
And I agree. How many miles did you have on that, Willis?
140,000.
Okay. And if you change the question, let me change the question to you, Eddie. Typically, when does the transmission give up the ghost the first time around?
Well, some models are more prone to transmission failures than others, but
okay,
I would say 140 to 190.
And I would agree with you. I think I'd drop it down to like 120. 120 to 180, we're going to have a transmission problem. We're going to need to overhaul it somewhere.
Right.
We can't lose sight, Willis, with the fact that you've been around the world 5 times in this car. Actually 6 times, mm-hmm. almost 6 times. So you've traveled the equator 6 times, and that's thousands, if not a million shifts.
Right, because the 1-2 shift and the 2-1 shift is the one that happens all the time, because it does it leaving a light and coming down to a stop.
Every time. So if you wanted... I don't think it's in your best interest to fix it. I agree with Eddie. I don't think you should do anything. I think you should just live with it. And I'm sure if after the first 3 or 4 harsh shifts, it smooths right out and doesn't do it for the rest of the day, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So I'm of the opinion the same as Eddie. I think you save your money. I think if you need a transmission, you'll be glad you did. But I don't think there's a magic wand that we have or anybody else has that's going to fix this problem.
It's like when you get older and you get up in the morning, your knees are creaking and popping. And then around 10 o'clock, you feel okay. So you're not going to get a total knee replacement until it's that all day long.
Yeah. So the answer is neither one of us would do anything. If you were our customer with that kind of a situation, we would tell you the same thing to your face. We don't think it's in your best interest to go hunt this down. And if you decide to do that, Willis, you look him in the eye and you say, let me demonstrate this. And so you park it there the night before and you show them the next morning what you're talking about. And then when they give you an estimate, you look them in the eye and you say, is this a guess or a fix? Because if you're guessing, I need to know whose money we're guessing, whether it's mine or yours. But if it's a fix, then I'm going to hold your feet to the fire and say, okay, well, I'm going to give you this much money and you're going to fix this problem. And it's not going to be there for the next 10 cold mornings. And that's how the conversation should sound.
Yes, and I've heard you say that many times, and that's what I'm going to do. I'll just let it lay, and don't worry about it.
Yep, that's what I do. Now, I'll tell you right now, Alger's going to call in, or he's going to text me, because he listens to and he owns a transmission
right.
shop, and as you know, I respect him like there's nobody else. And so if we made a mistake, he'll be texting me in just a minute.
He may call and say, hey, we've seen this before. There's a simple fix, that a valve that's sticking when it's cold. And so you take it out and you knock the varnish off of it, or you put some emery cloth on it.
You're right. But even then, we're going to drop the pan and pull the valve body to get to the valve.
Uh-huh.
And so we're looking at some significant dollars here. And he has fresh fluid. I would have said, let's change the fluid, but he's got fresh fluid in it. So, all righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Bob is your next caller, Bob.
Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm just looking for some general comments. When they were coming out with direct fuel injection, you weren't real positive on it. I was just wondering how that is working out.
Well, let me explain. Direct fuel injection is that the injector sits in the cylinder head adjacent to the spark plug. And it does no longer sprays at the back of the intake valve. So the charge is timed to where the intake valve is open, the injector fires. So here's the problem. As the valve opens and closes, we need a little bit of oil or a little bit of gasoline to wash the oil off the back side of the valve. So we develop carbon on the back side of the valve, but the spray, constant spray of gasoline kind of keeps that area clean. Well, with direct injection, we eliminated that cleaning of the back of the valve, and the direct ignition or the direct fuel injected cars began to build up carbon behind that intake valve, even to the point where the valve was plugged solid.
Right. It's just like a sponge on the back of the valve. Because there's a certain amount of oil that comes through the valve guide, even though there's valve guide seals on it to keep a major portion of oil. But some oil has to go through the valve guide to lubricate the valve stem. If not, the valve would seize in the guide. So some of that oil gets on there, and as Mark said, there's no way to wash that off.
And there's a lot of problems with respect to the direct injection motors having this intake back of the intake valve problem. I don't know that there's been a fix. I haven't heard much about it lately. We got wind of it from the machine shops that we do business with were telling us that they were having heads brought in where the backside of the intake valve looked like that somebody had put some kind of a frosting in there, and then it had expanded like that expanding foam.
If you put a marshmallow on the stem and just burned it to a crisp.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. So, but I haven't. You bring up a good point. I haven't heard much about it, and I don't know how they would fix that.
The only thing I'm thinking that we would do, one of those intake cleaning kits where you run a cleaner through the throttle body so it goes through the entire intake, which is going to wash those deposits off the valve. But I don't know what the interval would be and what would be a dedicated cleaner for that.
All right, fair enough. How much? Give me a range. I've got one in my head.
I would say out the door, 175.
And I was going to say 150 to 200. So all of a sudden, we have this. We don't know the interval. We have this problem. And we have our industry who's trying to survive because all the new cars need service once every 3 years. And I'm being facetious. At least once a year on anything major. We've got oil changes that they're talking about 10 and 15,000 mile intervals, which is once a year. We've got tires that are lasting during miles that we've never seen before. So we've got our industry kind of in shambles, and the new car dealers are no different because they make the new cars so much better that there's just a lot less that needs to be done. So our industry is going to take this and run with it. And I'm going to look into the future in my crystal ball and say that everybody's going to come up with a new product that it's going to be a magic lotion that if you have direct ignition, you need to come in every 6 months and have it done to the tune of $150 to $200.
Yeah.
And so I think, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, I even see the acronym for it. It's going to be a GDI cleaning kit.
Yeah. We've seen it already with injectors. When they first came out with fuel injectors in 1996 and north of that, everybody came out with a fuel injection. You were around then.
Yeah.
The very first car they demonstrated to us about the fuel injection cleaner happened to be Pam Bramlett's car, Cadillac. And we were over at TBA Supply. They're no longer in business anymore, but they're friends of ours and customers of ours. So Pam volunteered her Cadillac, and they didn't understand that they couldn't put this real caustic chemical in her car without bypassing the return line to the tank. So they flushed the injectors and promptly washed that caustic crap back into the tank through the return line and wiped out her fuel pump, and the car wouldn't start. And it was a great thing to see. Now, none of us at the time really knew what happened other than it wouldn't start, and nobody had a fuel pressure gauge. So it was 2 or 3 days later the word came out that, hey, we wiped out her pump. Well, the vendor paid for the fuel pump in the tank to be replaced. But do you remember that? That was going to be, and now they have, I'm not going to name the product, but they have a product that has a website, and if you want anything done to your car with magic lotion, go here, punch in your zip code, and we'll tell you where to go. Well, yeah. It's one of those places. In the old days, we used to have a flush machine on the wall, and it was a... What was the flush machine?
Oh, for the cooling system?
Yes.
It was the Winns.
That's right. W-Y-N-N-S. You're exactly right. It was on the wall, and you had to buy their chemicals, and they'd give you the machine for free. But you also had to sell the chemicals. So, Mark, if you'll just sell 3 flushes a day, you're going to make an extra $1,000 a month, and we're not going to charge you rent for the machine. So that's how it happened in the 70s and the 80s. So, anyway, thanks for bringing that up, Rob.
Yeah, I was wondering how that was working out. You know, I'm always interested in anything that will give you better gas mileage, but if it's going to cause problems, you know.
Yeah.
Or somebody else experience, I'll wait.
Yeah, I don't think there's a major gasoline improvement on direct ignition. I don't know why they did that, but I and I'll never know. But we'll figure that out someday. When we come back, we'll continue this talk. But anybody else that's got a car question, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this.
The mechanic raised
welcome
up
back,
from under
everybody.
My hood.
602-508-0960 if you'd like to call us. And my name's Mark Salem, and sitting next to me is Eddie Caruso. He's an ASE Master Technician, as I am. And he's been working at our repair shop for 28 years. And I'll tell you someday the story about the interview between Eddie and I back in 89. Yeah, the interview that I had with Eddie and what I learned from him during that interview. Let me tell you about Action Auto Repair up at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is a full-service facility, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983. Action Auto Repair gets the job done right, and he does domestics and imports, but he has a BMW certified technician, a master BMW technician. So if you have a BMW and you want to deal with somebody who's walked that path and knows that car inside and out, and you live anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, or you're willing to drive, then Tom's a great guy. He has other ASE Master Certified Technicians, and they want to help you as vehicle owners to understand what they're doing and why so you can make informed decisions. Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Before we go to the phones, I want to tell you folks something. I'm going to tell you that the guy sitting next to me holds the world's record for the most mileage on a Ford Explorer. A Ford Explorer. How many miles does it have?
It's a 1997. It's got a 5-liter V8, and it's a two-wheel drive, and it currently has 324,000 miles.
And it's never had the motor opened up.
I've never had a valve cover off of it.
And 300. Now, this isn't what we want other people to do, but you drive 30 miles to work and back every day, 30 miles up, 30 miles back.
Right.
So it's kind of highway driving. But you've never done any oil leaks?
No.
Okay, you've done normal maintenance.
Yeah, radiators, water pumps, a maintenance alternator when it had 150,000 miles just because...
You were there.
Right.
Okay. No transmissions.
Nope.
No rear diffs.
No.
Air conditioning systems?
I finally put a compressor on it earlier this year when it had about 320,000 miles.
Yeah.
First one.
See, that's a world record. That's for, as far as I'm concerned, that's a world record. So 350,000 miles divided by 25, that's 444, that's 12, 13, 14 times around the equator. That car's driven 14 times around the equator. That's an amazing thing. But it has a lot to do with your ability to identify problems before they get really bad.
Right.
It has a lot to do with...
And keep up on the maintenance. And...
Right. Now, how close do you follow the owner's manual?
Don't.
Okay. You have your own.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. We have customers that have their own. But like we were just talking to Willis not too long ago, he has his transmission serviced every year. Do you do that?
No, I don't. I can't remember the last time I actually serviced it. Yes. I use a full synthetic fluid. That I'm a dealer for that company.
Okay. So there's certain things that you're going to stick close to the owner's manual and certain things that you're going to deviate from it.
Right.
Okay. And it just depends on the risk and reward. Would you agree?
Exactly.
Okay. All righty. Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning, Bob?
So I have an 07 Prius. I only have 250,000 miles, so I'm kind of behind your friend.
Yeah.
That's still good, though.
Yeah. Heck, yes, that's good.
So I was driving on the highway this morning, and I had what I have to describe as a screeching rattle in the right front side of my car. I stopped and I looked under to make sure I wasn't dragging anything, and I didn't see anything. And I went down, and I'm in town now, and I'm driving around, and it's real quiet. There's no screeching at all. But if I get up above 55 miles per hour, it starts to screech, and the faster I go, the louder it gets. I'm wondering what you think is going on.
Wow, it's kind of odd that it takes a certain speed to make it happen. I mean, normally when we see stuff like that, it's actually some sort of a wind noise that yeah. we're getting a whistle or something through something somehow.
And I was thinking that maybe he picked up a piece of gravel in the brakes. We see that every once in a while, where somebody's got some contamination of the brake right. assembly. So as the rotor spins, we have this squealing noise. But coming and going, like you said, we've not seen that before.
No.
So, and a wheel bearing. It's going to have a wheel bearing on that right side.
Yes.
And the wheel bearing would make a noise throughout the entire spinning cycle from start to finish.
Right. It would pick up, let's say, maybe 30 miles an hour being a 1, and the faster it goes from, you know, the severity 1, 2, 3, 4.
And continues on.
Right. And typically, it will change when you go into a curve. You load one side or load the other side.
You took the words out of my mouth. You're exactly right. So when you drive it, as you go through the sweeping turns on a freeway, the question is does it make if you turn left, does the noise go away? Or if you turn right, does the noise get worse? So you're going to be dealing with those kinds of things. Now, the question is not a good question to chase. What's causing the noise, the abnormal noise? The question is what is the problem? And then once you find out the problem, you can then explain why it only happens at 55 and north of that.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's not waste too much time on trying to identify the problem. This is something you take to your technician, you put him in the car, you go take him for a ride. If he's the seasoned gray-haired guy, if he's a master tech, he's going to smile and he's going to know exactly where to go look for the problem. So
okay.
If you've got somebody like that, now, do you have anybody that you really like for your Prius work?
No, I don't. I was going to go to the dealer today because I have to drive the car a lot and I want to make sure that it's safe to drive.
Okay. I want you to send me an email. mark@marksalem.com, and I'm going to send you to a Prius shop that I went to the other day.
1 minute.
And I can't begin to tell you how impressed I was. This guy had, if he had one, he had 400 Priuses. Every wrecked Prius, every timed out Prius that's been a taxi cab in this world is on the back of his shop. He knows more about Priuses than any man I've ever met in any 10 guys. And you know what he was doing when I walked in? He was rebuilding a battery. He has all the equipment necessary to take batteries apart, and he has 1 year warranty and 2 year warranties. And you know what the difference is? The line he draws on the voltage it has and the amp draw it has after it's charged. So if it's slightly below the line, which is acceptable, then that's 1 year battery. But if all 39 or 40 individual batteries in the battery pack are above the line, then that's a 2 year battery.
And the guys that know what they're doing can replace just one or two cells in that battery pack.
Absolutely. So this guy's phenomenal. When we come back, we'll take your call. Join us if you want, 602-508-0960, but we're going to take care of Doug because he will help do the break. Doug, how is it we can help you?
Hi, Mark. Hi. I have an old 06 Dodge Ram 1500. I've had it for about... It's been very good, except one question would be, it pulls slightly to the right. You got to keep a little pressure on the wheel. Would a friend... Oh, tire pressure is good. Nowhere on the tires.
Okay. I know I could fix this, and I know you could fix this, too. Let me turn on your... Oh, you know what? I turned on the wrong mic, and that's the reason why you can't. So what's the chances you can fix this, Mr. Caruso?
Well, the first thing to do is swap the front tires to see if it's got a radial pull.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're just going to swap the front left to right, right to left, and go drive it. One of three things is going to happen.
It's going to go away, it's going to be the same, or it's going to get worse.
It's going to go away, which he can stop at that point.
Right.
Or it's going to pull left, or it's going to stay pulling right. So there's three things that are going to happen. Let's pretend that it stays there. What are you going to do next?
Then I'm probably going to put it on the alignment machine and check the toe and the caster and camber.
All right. Now, let me explain, Doug.
Okay.
Our alignment machines are really made for very basic users. And so each window of each of the six settings has a green window, and then if your needle moves outside the window, it turns red. Okay? But the windows might as well be a mile wide in the world we live in. So all the technicians, all the youngsters, are taught just to put the arrows inside the green.
Right. Green is good.
Green is good. And then they hand you the thing and they say to you, I don't know why it's pulling, but it's in spec. That's not true. A car will pull to the more. Now, let me just tell you, we're going to talk about cents here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cents. Okay, you with me? So I want to be 1 cent on both sides. And so they're going to give me a half a cent to 1.5 window, to a half of 1 cent to 1.5 cent window. So as long as my green arrows are in that window. But here's the deal. It'll pull to the more positive camber number, caster number, to the more positive caster number, right?
No, actually to the negative. Pulsing, because so.
Oh, you're right. I get that screwed up. You're exactly right. It's to the more negative No, are we talking camber?
Well, you start off with caster.
I changed my mind, though.
Well, you guys let me know.
I knew I messed up. It's the positive camber and the negative caster.
Correct.
Okay. So we know that to be the case. So if we looked at your car, and he's going to have a pull to the right, and if we saw that the camber was way too positive on the right, then we could either make it less positive, or we could make the other side a little bit more positive to eliminate the pull.
Correct.
And it's the same with caster. So you have three. You have camber, caster, and toe. Toe's not going to cause this problem, and I know that, and you know that, because he said the tires aren't wearing bad.
Right. If it's a toe problem, we would have a feathering of the tire.
So we know it's not toe. We know it's either going to be caster or camber. And so in alignment, switching, and now that's what your shop would do normally. The first thing they're going to do is check your air pressure. Then they're going to swap the tire side to side and go, well, check the air pressure, go drive it, verify the pull to the right, then swap the front tires and go drive it again. Now, that'll take 15 minutes.
Right.
15 or 20 minutes. At that particular point, that's part of the diagnostic. And so after he goes and drives it, it still pulls after he swaps them. Then he has to hang the heads on it, put four heads on it, one on each wheel, and look at the alignment specifications.
2 minutes.
It can be that the needles are all in the right spot, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right. We guys that are good alignments know how to manipulate the numbers to make it go straight down the road.
And we do that a lot for guys just like you, Doug. What part of town do you live in? I'll guide you.
East Mesa.
I would try Thompson's first. Thompson's Auto Repair. He's right there at Stapley and Main, just east on the south side of the road. And I think you could start the conversation off with, hey, do you have a real salty gray-haired alignment guy? And that's kind of what it all stands. That's what it sounds like. All righty?
Okay. All right. One other question. Could you it has a factory sunroof that doesn't work. Where do you get a sunroof fixed or looked at?
Most of us want nothing to do with the sunroof because the parts are rare. And is it a factory one or an aftermarket one?
I'm not absolutely certain, but I believe it's a factory by looking at it.
Okay. Well, obviously the basics would be go look at the power supply on the ground.
Right. Fuses and switches first.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And at that point, on my wives the other day, you actually fixed my wives because the insulation or the rubber molding was wadded up.
Right, the little bellow.
Yeah, and so you fix that. But as far as aftermarket ones, we shy away from aftermarket ones. But if it's a factory one, then obviously there is a protocol. And you check for switches. And what was the other thing you said?
Fuses.
Switches and fuses. And we need power and ground up to a switch that reverses the polarity. So power, ground, and then ground, power. And that opens and closes the window. Then we look at the transmission and the mechanisms to see if it's capable of opening and closing. Sometimes it'll pop the fuse because it's stuck closed. And that happens sometimes. So what part of town do you live in?
East Mesa.
East Mesa. I'm still going to send you to Thompson's. You just ask him if he wants to take a moonroof on. And if not, you might call Tempe Dodge. That's my favorite place, but you can call Tempe Dodge and ask them if what their diagnostic fee would be for a sunroof issue and see what happens. All right?
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Doug. Thank you for calling. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to give us a call. What was I going to ask you about? Oh, I need to do Kurtz. Because Kurtz is a great guy, and he's certainly one of the guys on my list that I can always depend on. He's not one of them. He's one of many on my list. All of them I can depend on. But Kurtz is up at I-17 in Bell. He's been an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair facility since 1987. He won. He was recognized as one of the Better Business Bureau Ethic Awards winner and that says a whole bunch. He has ASE certified technicians, and his service manager, Jeff, is a master technician, and his number one tech is Eric, and he's a master technician. So you really do get a lot of experience between Jeff and Eric with respect to their training and the tests they've passed. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Bell, Kurtz is a great place to go. He's a good guy. And he'll treat you fairly. And he's more than once pulled a rabbit out of his hat where I've sent him somebody that starts off with, I've been to 100 shops and nobody can fix, da-da-da. Well, Kurtz is one of those guys that's like waving the flag in front of the bull. He doesn't have any hair, but it'll stand up on his neck and he'll raise his hand and say, let me take a look at it. We'll be right back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go till noon. So if you have a car question or car problem, 602-508-0960. We have four open lines. Charlie is first. And we're going to go to Charlie right now for waiting through the break. Charlie, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, sir, and thank you for what you do for everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a 95 F-250 with a 7.3 turbo diesel. And I've got a fuel leak. I think it's coming up. I believe the fuel lines come steel towards the front of the motor, towards the front of the truck, and then transitioned into some kind of flexible, maybe rubber, and then back to steel. And I think that may be where my leak's at. Am I thinking right about that?
Well, you think that 7.3's got an in-tank electric pump that feeds that high-pressure pump?
I believe so, and then, the high-pressure up on the engine.
So... This is the testing procedure we would use. First of all, we'd get it up in the air, at least staging on a rack, so we could get underneath it. But we would cycle the key on without the engine running, and if, in fact, it is a pressure line from the tank, then it's going to start leaking right then and there.
Depending on the severity of the leak.
Right. It's also going to leak for just a short period of time because it's probably going to be programmed to shut the pump off if it doesn't see the engine start after 10 seconds or 3 seconds, 10 seconds or whatever. So okay. that would be something. Do you smell it all the time you drive it?
Pretty much. Yeah, it's faint, but I know that there's a coating of fuel. When I stop it, a little bit drip on the ground, and I get underneath it and look at it, and it's kind of wet. But I don't think it has the in-tank fuel pump.
Okay. Do you know of any other way we're going to get the fuel forward? I'm asking Eddie here.
Yeah, because I'm not sure I know on some of the Dodges they actually have a mechanical old-style fuel pump on the engine.
Okay. No, you're right. And this is
a Ford.
Right. It's a 7.3. Yeah, you said Dodge, but that's okay.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I know the Dodges do. I'm not sure about the Fords.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that either, but we have to get the fuel from the tank to the high-pressure pump, and then the high-pressure pump pressurizes the fuel to thousands of PSI, and then that's what's injected into the motor. So I don't know. If you wanted to find out, and it really doesn't matter when we're chasing down this leak, if you can take it to your shop and say, look right here, this leak is right about the center of the passenger window, right directly under this point I'm pointing. That's where the leak's at. That's going to help us. That's going to save a lot of money and time if he can triangulate the leak. Or he says, it's about 18 inches diagonally from the right front headlight. That kind of stuff we
right.
like to have.
And there's got
to
be some sort of flexible connection from the steel lines that run down the frame up to the engine, because obviously the engine's going to move, so we can have a rigid line going from the frame to the engine.
And but that diesel pressure, that fuel pressure is going to be probably 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds from
max,
the back end?
At the max, yeah.
Okay, but still, think about that, though. If we have a rubber line leaking, it should be really spewing. And it's and after all, it's a 95, so it's almost 20. Well, it's more than 20 years old. So I'm just thinking, of course, it doesn't make any difference if it's a metal-to-metal connection or if it's leaking out of the fuel filter housing or if it's coming off of one of the lines that feeds the high-pressure pumps or one of the injectors. It really makes no difference. It's just find the leak and then fix the leak. But trying to guess where it's at based on that we know that it's got rubber lines is probably not fruitful time. It's not going to be hard to find that leak either.
No.
I would imagine that somebody could eyeball that leak and clean it up with some brake clean, then start the truck up or turn the key on and see it leak again. How long is that going to take? 20?
20 minutes, yeah. Just depending
20 to 30 minutes.
You know, sometimes it might be a little hard to access or see the lines depending on how they're routed. But even then, if you get them off and dry them off, just run your fingers down the line when it's running, you'll instantly pick up the feel.
And access is an important thing. Sometimes we have to move things to see different things. So sometimes we have to pull shrouds or we have to pull parts off the car to get underneath it to look because we know that this leak is here, but the alternator sits on top of this water line on a gasoline motor is a good example. Right. So sometimes we have to move that. But do you have a shop that you like?
Well, I'd have you guys do a number of things for me, and I appreciate, you know, I'd probably bring it to you guys.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that we could find that leak for you. And if you could point, if you could triangulate where the leak is at, then you already know, Charlie, that you can walk out into the shop and watch it work on your car. So, you know, we don't, there's nothing, you can go out there and you can talk to the technician. You just have to make sure that you don't talk to him too much because we're going to be billing his time to you. So, but to watch him do this job and talk to him about it, and then he holds a flashlight up and you look at it, that's the kind of shop that there's many of those out there.
Right.
We're not the only shop that does that. There's many good guys out there. But anyway, we're happy to look at it as well. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you very much.
Ron is your next caller, Ron.
And Ron, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Yeah, I've got a 2006 Ford F-150 Super Crew with a 5.4 motor in it, the four-wheel drive. And whenever the weather changes and it gets cold, I'm sorry, it's a 2010 Ford F-150, 2010. When the weather gets cold, the truck wants to stop all by itself. Some brake comes on, it starts grinding, or it sounds like a grinding sound, but then it goes away when it warms up. Won't do it all summer long, and then wintertime comes, it just gets cold, and you go to take off, and the truck starts to stop all by itself.
Okay, Mr. Ford guy, take your shot.
So it's as if the brakes are being applied by themselves? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, and I don't know if it's just one brake or a couple brakes, but it makes kind of a growling, grinding noise inside the truck, and it's wanting to stop, but I'm not even touching the brake. But and then the light on the dash comes on while I'm in icy conditions. But then after it warms up, it goes away and it doesn't do it again. It won't do it all summer long, and then wintertime comes and here it starts again.
Well, I guess the first thing we need to do is identify which corner of the vehicle it is. And my suggestion would be run down to Harbor Freight and pick up one of those infrared temperature guns. And when it's doing it, you know, pull off to the side of the road where it's safe and just take that gun and gun each wheel on the truck.
Hub.
Yeah.
Go to the hub, and if the wheel's got holes, you can gun right through the holes to the rotor.
I can see the rotors on all of them.
Yeah, and then you'll be able to identify which wheel it is because the one that's dragging is going to be much hotter than the other three.
And if they're all the same, then you're wrong about the brakes dragging.
Right, or they're all dragging.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Or they're all dragging, but he would be able to know that because once he touched it with a wet finger, it'd sizzle, and he'd know that that's it. But
this only does it real briefly, you know, and then it's just like, okay, and then it's over, and then you're like, which, you know, it doesn't do it long enough to hang your head out the window and go, okay, which one, where's this going on, you know? So
okay, well,
but I gotcha.
Here's two things you can do. The first thing I want you to do is park it on level ground tonight if you can. And tomorrow morning when you start it up, or when you decide to move it, open the door, stick your key in, don't start the thing, put it in neutral and see if you can push it forward a foot or back. Without ever touching anything, let's see if the brakes are truly locked up. I don't know how they would be, but then the other thing to do is start it up and put it in drive and coast forward, throw it into drive, and shut the car off. And see if it coasts, and that'll tell you if the brakes are hanging up, right?
Right.
So what we're doing is we're testing your hypothesis that the brakes are hanging up. Now, the third thing you can do is you can start it up, take your left foot, and gently touch the brake pedal and drive away. And if the noise is gone, and you know that otherwise, had you not had your foot on the brake, the noise would be there, then it's definitely brakes.
Well, you know, you can be coasting right along just smoothly and start turning, you know, turning a little bit or whatever, and it'll just all of a sudden just come on. So it's going down the road perfectly fine, nothing's dragging, and all of a sudden it just, you know, like it's a wheel sensor, and I only hesitate that it's a wheel sensor because it's only because of the temperature. In the summertime, it won't do it.
No, there's nothing. The wheel sensor makes no noise. It has nothing to do with noise, nothing at all.
Right. but it couldn't just cause my brakes to come on because it's, what am I going to say it is?
No, there's no code, and there's no ABS light, so you don't have any other symptoms that would suggest. And besides that, it's not going to lock up a wheel or unlock a wheel until you're in brake mode. So you said you're just driving down the road and you turn the steering wheel left to right, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it isn't. That has nothing to do with your brake system, right?
Right, because it's, I mean, for...
Exactly, yeah.
For it to activate the ABS, it needs to see that the brake lights are on.
Yeah.
And if there's a problem with the wheel speed sensor, all of a sudden they're all reading 30 and one goes to zero, it's not going to apply the brakes. It's going to release the brake on that wheel.
Because it thinks it's locked up. So it's, you know, it's easy to guess, but this is, again, this is a no big deal diagnosis. All we need to do is have you show us what the heck it, when I say we are industry, you need to show us how to make it happen. So if it only happens in the morning for a few minutes, you just got to park it at the shop the night before and then meet them in the morning and take their seasoned tech out with you and show them what the deal is. So if you can find out whether it's even brake-related by applying the brakes and releasing the brakes and applying the brakes, if you can make the noise come and go with brake application, then we're a little closer than we were.
Correct.
So
Brenda is your next caller.
But
Brenda.
As far as swinging the steering wheel left and right, that's a wheel-bearing issue.
Yes.
And that wouldn't have anything to do with the brakes. So if you turned it left on a sweeping turn at 40 miles an hour and you hear, yeah, then you turn right and the noise goes away. On a left turn, if it's the left... and we're making a yee-yee-yee in the left front, then we're loading the inner bearing, right? We're loading the inner bearing and the outer on the right. So this is what we know as technicians. When we're doing a left turn, we're loading one of the two bearings on the left and one of the other bearings on the right, typically the inner on the left steer and the outer on the right. So if the noise is only there when you're making a left turn and it's the right front, then it's the outer bearing on the right front. So that's kind of how we work it out. Anyway, thank you very much. And Gil, what was that gentleman's name?
Oh, that was Brenda.
No. Brenda, who's before Brenda? We just talked to him.
Just spoke with Ron.
Okay, that's the name I neglected to write down. Okay, Brenda, what's up? How can we help you?
Okay, I have a 2008 Yukon. It's got a lot of miles, probably around 260, 270. But about 2 months ago, just out of the blue, when I would start the car... in park, of course, the RPMs would rev up to like about 3,000.
2 minutes.
And then if I let it sit there and do that, you know, occasionally it'll come down and then I can shift it into reverse or park and it doesn't, you know, make a jerk. But sometimes it doesn't come down. And so when I put it in drive or reverse, it has a big, you know, a big...
Hard thump.
Yes.
Because the idle's too high.
Hard.
Okay.
Yeah, it's idling too high. Yeah.
Okay.
But only in park. Like when I stop at a stop sign, you know, when I'm in drive, it doesn't do it.
Okay. All right. Well, forget about the shift problem because that's related to the high idle. What you have is an uncontrollable idle when you start it cold, right?
Correct.
Right.
So there's...
Okay.
Any check engine lights?
What?
Is the check engine light on?
Do you have any dashboard lights coming on? A check engine light? The yellow check engine? Okay. Idler control motor, dirty throttle blades.
That is throttle by wire, so there is no idle air control. So we're moving the throttle plate to control idle speed.
Okay.
So somehow we're missing the correlation between the accelerator pedal and the throttle blade position. But normally that always sets a check engine light, and most times that will put you in limp mode.
Right. She wouldn't have any throttle at all.
Right.
She wouldn't have any throttle. So we're talking about throttle by wire where we no longer have a cable. And when you apply the accelerator, there are two switches, two reporters, two switches that talk to the throttle. So both of them have to be synchronized. And if you lose one or one falls out of spec, it takes your throttle away from you, and you can't use the throttle at all. So,
but the only thing I could say is that there has to be a vacuum leak when it's cold.
Bingo. Because and see, we raise and lower the idle by opening and closing a vacuum port. So if all of a sudden and that thing has a PCV valve, doesn't that have a PCV valve hose that goes bad all the time? Okay. So
or has the fixed orifice PCV on it.
Exactly. So if you have too much air being delivered to the motor in the morning and it has a bad vacuum leak, that would be a sucking sound underneath the hood for an experienced ear. then that's causing your idle to race up to 3,000, and the throttle has nothing. It's confused. It's going, why are you at 3,000 when I'm telling the computer's telling me that you're here, and I told you to be here, and for whatever reason, you're up high. So that's the conversation going on between the computer and the throttle switches, both at the pedal and at the throttle blades, which is the carburetor, so to speak, on your engine. So somebody's just going to have to go in there, and I agree with you. I think it's 65% chance she's got a bad vacuum leak that's causing an idle to raise up at 3,000 RPM.
Right.
So don't tell them it's an idle leak or a vacuum leak. Just tell them I've got this kind of problem. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We'll be back.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock till noon, we're going to be talking about cars. And, Brenda, we had a chance to talk off the air about your car, and so we have some more information for you. So hang on real tight. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is one of the shops on my best car list, and you can find that at marksalem.com. And these are shops that I have personally checked out. I know the people that own them, and I know that they're really good, and they have the ability to do what they say they do. Well, Thompson's is one of those. He's been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. They have ASE-certified technicians. They've been in the Mesa area for 100 years, if not more. And you only have to meet Brian or Thelma to understand why they're on my list, because they are just such nice people. And Brian is the kind of guy that you'd want to marry your daughter, except he's married to Thelma, so forget that idea. So if you're anywhere near Main Street, And just east of Stapley on Main Street on the south side of the road is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. And here's the good news. Well, good and bad. He's the only shop in Mesa that's passed all the requirements to be on our best car repair shops list. Brenda, we were talking to Brenda. One of the things that we have that the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone does not have is a scanner.
Right. It's thousands and thousands of dollars.
And the scanner actually allows us to look at the activity that's going on. It allows us to see everything that's going into the computer and what's coming out of the computer.
Right, and also allows us to have what's called bidirectional control, where we can activate things on the engine through the scanner.
We can make things happen.
Yes.
And it says, if you want the mirrors to wiggle like your ears, push this button. And I'm being facetious, but that's... So on her particular car, we would plug in a scanner and we would look at fuel trim.
Correct.
Okay, let's pretend that fuel trim is 1 to 5. Okay? Or 1 to 10. Let's do 1 to 10 because it's easier. Fuel trim is 1 to 10. A normal fuel trim would be?
Right in the middle at 5.
5. Bingo. So if we're going to go left of 5, we're going to go lean. Okay?
Right. We're going to go down.
Down. And that's more air and less fuel.
Right.
We have a problem.
We're pulling fuel out.
Right. On the right side of 5, between 5 and 10, that's the rich side.
Right.
So that means we got too much fuel, not enough air.
We're turning the faucet on.
That's right. The faucet's on full blast. So if we looked at her car and we looked at the fuel trim, we have short-term and long-term. So short-term means short-term. Long-term means, well, short-term is the last 10 minutes, and long-term is the last 10 days, hypothetically.
Right.
Okay. So we could look at her fuel trim numbers for a very long time. And if we had the vacuum leak that you and I think she has, on the 1 to 10 scale, what would her fuel trim be?
It would be up 7 or 8. It would be on the rich side adding fuel. So it's adding fuel to compensate for a lean condition.
And so it sees way too much air, and it looks at the chart, and it says, well, if I see this much air, I better add this much fuel. And I need to control the RPM of the engine all at the same time. So we're going to see numbers between 5 and 10 in this hypothetical thing we're trying
right.
to draw with words as opposed to having a blackboard. So we would be looking at her short-term and long-term fuel trim. Now, if it was right in the middle, both short-term and long-term, then our whole hypothesis about a vacuum leak goes away.
Correct.
But we're right that it's got a vacuum leak. We just have to find it.
Right.
And she's got a plastic intake, you said.
Yes.
On the Yukon. And that's a problem because the plastic intake manifold will warp or crack.
Right. And it's, you know, it's seated on aluminum heads, so the plastic expands and contracts at a different rate than the aluminum does.
And so we cracks or breaks.
Right.
And it also can be something where the crack is present cold, but once the engine warms up, the plastic expands and the vacuum leak goes away.
Correct.
Which is what she said.
Right.
So we only have a small window to look at this. We look at the scanner, and it says, hey, we've got a fuel trim way out of whack. So now we know. So, but we've only got maybe 5 minutes to track that fuel leak down before the motor gets warm
the
enough.
Vacuum leak, yeah.
And then all of a sudden we'll see fuel trim recorrect and go back to 5 on a 1 to 10 scale.
Yep.
So that's how it works. Gerard, how are you today? What can we do for you?
How do you do, Mark? Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
Got basically two questions. The first one that I have, I've got a 94 Toyota 4Runner. And I'm having trouble with the motor a lot of times in start and stuff. And I think what I've got is I've got a lot of pigtails on the injectors that are cracked and really bad. And I was wondering, do you know of a good supplier that has pigtails so that I can replace instead of replacing the whole harness?
Yeah. Yeah, there are suppliers out there that have pigtails. Can you think of the brand? Would Dorman have that?
Dorman, I'm sure, probably has them.
D-O-R-M-A-N.
Yeah. Eklund, which I think is Napa.
Yeah, you might try them.
Standard Ignition probably has them too.
But let's talk about this for a minute. That 4Runner got a V6?
Yes.
Okay.
I rebuilt the motor. I do have a problem right now. I put new heads on, but I've got two cylinders that the valves are sticking, so I'm going to start tearing it apart. And I figured while I'm tearing it apart, I want to replace these pigtails that are bad.
Okay, but you started off by saying that you had a problem with it cranking and starting up.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. It cranks but doesn't catch, right?
Right.
So the first thing you have to do is determine the absence of fuel, the absence of spark. Have you got there?
I've got spark, I've got fuel, but I thought at one time it was that cold start solenoid.
Okay.
So I did replace that, but I still have a problem every once in a while to try to start it. Sometimes it starts right up, other times it doesn't.
Okay. Well, obviously we're missing spark or fuel at the beginning of this start process. So if you hooked up a fuel pressure gauge and taped it to the outside of your windshield for a couple of days, you'd probably figure that out pretty quick. So you turn your key on and you'd see the fuel pressure jump up to, let's just use a stupid number, 30.
40 PSI.
Okay, 40 PSI. So we're going to go jump to 40, but in the case where it cranks but doesn't catch, it comes up to 40, then it drops immediately to 12 or 18, and it's static at that point. Well, we got a check valve in the tank that's bad. We got a fuel pressure regulator that's bad. We got an injector that's leaking like a sieve. You haven't said anything about black smoke yet out of the tailpipe. So those are all the things that you have to work on. You can keep replacing parts. We like guys like you that do that because ultimately you bring it in and then we'll wave our magic wand and fix it. And then we get to say to you, doggone it, Gerard, you spent about 5 times more than I'm going to charge you to fix this thing. And I'm teasing you and thank you for laughing. Thank you for laughing. But in your case, you need to find out fuel or spark. And that's the beginning of that. I have an extended cranking intermittently. That's what that's called, extended cranking intermittently, and then you can add when cold or when hot. That will help.
Okay.
But fuel pressure gauge is the first place you have to start. Okay, you had a second question. And the pigtails, you can call your Napa store, Eklund, and see if they have pigtails. Dorman, you're not going to be able to buy from them, but Dorman makes lots of aftermarket parts that fail that the dealers and the manufacturers don't service. So they'll make pieces of that harness for you that you can cut and splice those new connectors on. So Dorman would be a good place to go. Okay, now, question number two.
Now I've got an old three-quarter ton 2500 95 Chevy, and I'm always having problems with the floating axles, the seals are on the hubs where they're always ends up starting leaking every time I replace them. Do they sell a kit where it's a sleeve that goes over where the rubber seal would fit on from the shaft? Because it looks like I've got, like, a wear point right there where the seal is.
Okay, now wait a minute. Are you talking front or rear?
On the rear.
Rear? Okay. And where's the leak exactly at? Is it the backside of the drum?
Yeah, it's where the shaft seal is, and then the oil comes out of the rear end or whatever,
okay,
and comes down and then falls onto the rear brakes.
Okay. We have oil that transfers between, Eddie and I are talking, between the pumpkin and the hubs, the bearings
Correct,
and the
right.
hubs. So where's the seal?
The seal's on the back side of the drum.
Okay.
So on this one, you have the 6 nuts on the axle. You take those out, pull the axle out,
then
you've got the 2 locking nuts that secure the drum and hub to the axle, and then you pull those out. But we need to determine whether it's leaking from where the seal rides on the rear axle or it can actually be leaking between where the seal fits into the hub.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Is I was trying to. You're exactly right. We need to look to see what's leaking on the seal. As far as, do we have a seal on the axle itself?
Where it bolts to the hub?
Yes.
Typically, there's a flat metal flange, or sometimes they have an O-ring with a recessed groove that it fits in.
Right. But it's what I'm driving at. It's not like a other Chevrolet differential where we put a sleeve over where the seal rides
yeah.
on.
Yeah, I'm not.
This
I'm
has
not aware
nothing
that,
like that.
Yeah,
at
I'm
all.
Not aware that there's a wear sleeve that can be installed
right.
on that.
Or anything else. The only other thing it could be is what happens if the back bearing erases real sloppy and we're bouncing that back bearing around? Wouldn't we wipe out that back seal?
Yeah, if the hub is dancing on the
right.
on the axle flange.
So you'd have to take a micrometer and lift and lower the drum and see if you've got excessive movement, 10, 12, 15 thousandths. Then you could determine that back bearing. So he could replace the back bearing in the race and the seal while he's there and see if that's going to make any difference. So I don't know. We haven't had one of those in a long time. Can you think if we've ever had? We've had oil leaks at
right.
the back of those those floating axles, but we've never really struggled with you know figuring out where the leak was at. But what Eddie's saying, and I agree with him, is it's either coming out of the rubber part of the seal or the mounting part of the seal, right?
Correct. And
okay.
the key is to make sure when you drive a new seal into the hub that area where the outer diameter of the seal goes into the hub, that area of the hub is nice and clean.
And it's not bent.
Right.
And we're using a big flat seal installer. So
yeah, that's what I have.
Okay. So that yeah. I don't know anything else that we can tell you. What happens if the differential's too full, Eddie?
Well, normally it comes out the vent.
Okay. And
right,
you're
and
right.
I checked the vent to make sure that wasn't plugged. It could cause pressure to build up for those seals. So
okay.
I'm not having that problem either.
All righty. Well, that's the best we can do
okay.
for you. Good luck to
all
you.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much, Gerard. Okay. You got anything else on your mind? The hard part on a lot of this stuff is sometimes we've seen it a lot.
So yes. 1 minute.
You have a good answer. You got a good direction of travel. It's like that throttle to 3,000 RPM. We've seen that before. We've seen the intakes leak. We've seen the vacuum leaks. We've seen all this. But this, I can tell you going back to the 70s when we had tow trucks with floating axles, if you didn't put those axle lock nuts on right, then that you'd be driving down the road and those dual wheels would just walk out on you. And the whole axle would come out. And if you were lucky, the axle didn't completely come out, which would cause the truck then to fall down on the ground and wipe out the differential flange.
Yep.
And the two tires go over and happen to hit a brand new BMW that's worth $100,000. So you have all those things that happen in the blink of an eye. So those are the kinds of issues that you typically end up with. But as far as the axle seal is concerned, I don't think we've struggled with that.
No, really haven't.
It's just not been something that we've done over and over and over again. And both of us have been together working on for 28 years. And I would see a comeback like that.
Typically when we see a repeat failure, it's because someone didn't use something flat and square to drive the seal in, and they used a hammer and they dimpled the shell of the seal, which distorted the roundness of the rubber seal. And
right.
so it wasn't round anymore and it wouldn't seal.
And the old guys used to pack the back of the seals no matter what with grease.
So you don't knock the garter spring off.
Exactly right. So if you take the hub off and the garter spring's hanging on the axle, then you kind of know what's going on. You hit it too hard,
yep.
you knock the garter spring off. There's a spring behind the seal that goes around the rubber containment portion.
Yeah, the inner
which
lip
is
of it.
Inner lip. And so this rubber or this little spring is a tightly wound spring. Why do they call it a garter string?
Because it's the same as a woman would put around her thigh. It's a
okay. It's
a round spring, a round.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if you knew something. I didn't. I just don't know. I'm not going there. Besides that, I have an apology to make real quick, too. Last week, we misbehaved. I misbehaved. And so for those of you that I may have offended last week, I'm sorry. From the bottom of my heart, I'm sorry. I'm not making any excuses. I'm going to tell you that there was two other guys in the studio, and they didn't have anything to do with it. When I got the steering wheel of this show, everything that happens here that's bad is on my shoulders. So on behalf of all of us, I'm going to apologize. But even more important, I'm going to tell you that I know the difference, and we crossed the line, and we shouldn't have. So we didn't really go after anybody. That wasn't the issue.
No, it wasn't malicious.
We were talking about something that we shouldn't have been talking about. And so for those of you that I may have offended, I deeply apologize. We'll be back right after this. Doug, good morning. What kind of problem have you got?
Thanks for taking my call so quickly, too. I've got a 2007 Dodge Crew Cab Pickup 1500.
Okay.
And I thought I'd give you guys a little giggle halfway through your show here. This started about a year ago, and it's in my AC heating system.
Uh-huh.
And during the summertime, and of course I'm in Phoenix, but I'm a native, so it's not that big of a deal. I can't turn the AC up all the way, the fan, mm-hmm. because it'll kick into the heater.
Okay.
And in the wintertime, when I'm trying to get the heater on, I actually have to find a bump in the rope, like a speed bump or railroad tracks or something like that, to get the flapper to flip over to turn the heater on.
Okay, that's called a blend door.
Okay. Okay. And that's the only way I can get the heater to come on in the wintertime.
Well, we would have fixed that for you for about $12.50 because we would have just stuck a coat hanger. We'd heat up the end of the coat hanger, and we'd stick it through the duct, and we'd grab a hold of the blend door. And then we say to you, pull it for cold and push it for hot. Now, I want to tell you something. We've done stupid stuff like that before.
Oh, yeah.
There's been times where the expense to fix it was just astronomical, and we just put some jerry-rig thing in there for some lady to pull it for cold and push it for hot.
With numerous times we've done just an on-off ball valve for a heater hose.
Yes.
There's a, you know, some of these cars have electronic heater valves and stuff like that. We just tell them, you're going to have AC all summer, and then in the wintertime when you want heat, you just turn this knob and you've got heat.
And you got heat. So we've gone back to the 50s and the 60s in that sense. But anyway, you probably fixed this some weird way by beating on the dashboard.
In the summertime, sometimes that works. But in the wintertime, I don't want to hit my dashboard any harder because when I can't find a bump to get that flapper or whatever you called it to shut or open.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cold ride.
Okay, the McDonald's wrappers. You found a cheeseburger in there. But anyway, what did you find? How did you fix this?
I have not fixed it yet. Okay. And I did take it into a shop. And this is the part that's probably going to tick you off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, they said, well, yeah, then we'll have to pull the whole dash out. Da-da-da-da-da. It's going to cost you about $6,000. And I'm like, yeah, I'll find a bump.
Well, hold on. $6,000?
Yep.
Oh, Jesus.
So
are you sure you didn't misunderstand him?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Pull the whole dash out, the whole nine.
All right. Well,
to me, that sounds like a scare tactic they just didn't want to work on.
And you're exactly right. Back in the old days, we did just exactly that. We would shoot through the moon just because we didn't want it to go in and diagnose it. If you went to one of those shops that used to work on transmissions but now does everything, or if you went to one of those brake shops that used to just do brakes and now they do bumper-to-bumper stuff, then that's what you run across. Guys like that don't want to take this. Give me a range to fix this.
Well, it depends.
Worst case scenario,
pull the dash, pull the heater box, $1,300.
Okay. And that's worst case scenario. Now, once we get in there, we'll know whether the motor's bad, the linkage is broken, whether the door has a bubble gum wrapped around it. We'll be able to see what the heck's going on.
Well, on those, they have the actuator that sits on top of the blend door.
Okay.
And it looks a lot like the connection from an extension to a socket. It's a square drive.
Okay.
So what's happened on his, it sounds like, is the square portion of his blend door has broken.
Okay.
And so he can control it to a certain point when the AC's on, but if he puts the blower on high, it overcomes that little bit of a connection, and it just flaps the door and moves it.
Right.
Because the volume of air is moving the door,
and
because it's loose in its mounting.
Right.
Okay. So that's...
Well, maybe also as a little addition, my switch for the vent controls is completely inoperative. It blows out the main vent, and that's it. I don't have any control on the defrosters, anything at all. I don't know if that helps or confuses it more or what. But
well, we'd certainly want to know why there's no resistance on that particular slide. So we'd have to take a look at that. But when we take your dashboard out to deal with your blend door, we're going to have all that stuff out there too.
Yeah. And I did that on Andy's truck. She had a blend door on her Dodge.
Yeah. That's my daughter, by the way.
And I ended up taking the the front seats out, the console, the dash,
right.
And we went in and replaced every single actuator. The actuators weren't that expensive themselves. It's just the labor to get in and do them.
It was $1,300 in and $200 worth of parts.
Yes.
Yeah, or something like that. Now, you have to understand, you don't want to watch them work on your truck when they do that. You don't want to be around because people would literally poop their pants if they saw that we took the dashboard from driver's side to passenger side and we had it sitting on the ground. Then we have the two seats sitting outside the car.
The carpet's out.
And we've got a 5-gallon, now I'm just drawing this picture for you, but we don't do this. 5-gallon bucket half full of nuts and bolts. When you see that, you say to the technician, don't pass out on me. Don't die on me because of the rest of us is going to take us a week to put. But guys like Eddie that do this kind of work, they separate the bolts. They put them back in the hole they found them. They do lots of tricks like that. And then it's a sin at the end of the day to end up with one or two bolts.
I have to tell you, one of the greatest things in all the years I've been doing this is to have a cell phone now where I can take a picture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Before vacuum lines, I'd have to draw it on a piece of paper. Now I can take pictures of stuff, pictures of bolts and stuff, and it's so easy.
So you have 10 of the same kind of bolts, and you can take a wide-angle picture and show one of them missing and all the rest of them not.
Right.
So you can do that. But the answer to your worst-case scenario we're talking about is $1,300 worth of labor plus the parts.
Right.
That's worst-case scenario. But there's lots of shops that can fix that. No matter where you're at, go to marksalem.com, and you'll be able to find a shop that's close to you and call them up and say, hey, have you ever had the dash out of an 07 Dodge 1500, and it's a gas motor, obviously. It's not a diesel, but have you had the dash out? And how about blend doors and actuators to make it go from defrost to floor and center vent? Anyway, thanks very much, Doug. And Tim and John, I'm going to be back in about 3.5 minutes. Tim, you'll be first. John will be second, and we'll get you right away. I'm Mark Salem. The phone number here is 602-508-0960. We have three lines available. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Eddie Caruso, Master Technician. Mark Salem, Master Technician. We're here at your service right here on KKNT. Monster with the polygraph,
Polyglass.
Polyglass, that's right. Isn't it the polyglass tires?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, tire, not a wheel.
Oh, okay. Well, that was... All right, behind the scenes, we're talking about this dashboard. We're talking about it's close to the amount of time necessary to pull an engine, like a little four-cylinder
yes.
or something like that. But we're talking about 7, 8, 9 hours.
Yes.
It's not something that somebody's going to beat, okay? So if we're billing for 8 hours, this is not one of those jobs that they're going to do it in 6.
Yeah, there really aren't many shortcuts. And
you've
got it. I mean, you have to do it right because...
You don't want to do it again.
And Mark always says when he sees me doing that, boy, I hope that there aren't any rattles in that dash when you're done.
Well, or lost bolts or, you know. But even more important than that, you said something that just made me laugh. You said it's $1,300 if...
Oh, if they don't have a dog.
If they... Because when we take the dash apart...
We're laying on our backs, and so if they have a pet, a dog, or a cat, you come out from on the dash with this doggy afro.
and it stinks, and it's ugly, and then all of a sudden, we literally have gasoline-powered blowers, mm-hmm. and we'll roll the truck out into the parking lot and get inside there and blow all that dog
hair
away.
Or take it over to the car wash and vacuum it out.
And vacuum it off.
And the other thing is that if they have aftermarket stereos and alarms, and they have wires that are crisscrossing the dash, and you can't pull the dash without breaking that connection. Most of the dashes nowadays are designed to come out where you can unplug components and
lift it and pull it.
And they come out
plug and play.
Yeah.
But when
fairly
you have the aftermarket crap, you've got all these other wires, and oftentimes we'll put them all in a plug, or oftentimes we'll make them better because we have easier access, but that drives us crazy.
Yeah.
And if they're not color-coded and somebody used brown wire, brown lamp cord on everything, that even makes it even tougher.
Oh, I love red grounds and black powers.
yeah, that's really our life, is if the wire's red, we hope it's powered. If it's black, it's a ground. But that doesn't always happen. All righty, Tim, good morning, buddy. Thank you for holding.
Good morning. How you doing?
Go right ahead.
So I got two problems I'm hoping you can help me out with. And so I've got a 2010 Dodge Ram with 4.7 in it, a 1500. At 70,000 miles, I started having a problem where it was going into limp mode, and when I'd come up to a stoplight when I first started for the day, and it's automatic, I'd come up to a stoplight, I'd hit the brakes and come to a stop, and it would kill it as if I was driving a manual, didn't push in the clutch, and stepped on the brake in first gear. And so I talked to a buddy of mine. He was a mechanic in the military, and he told me to change the transmission fluid and the filter. So I did that, and it fixed it. Well, I'm at 107,000 miles. It's doing the same thing again. And I was always under the impression that you didn't need to change your transmission fluid and filter that often in an automatic transmission. I'm trying to figure out if I just did a Band-Aid fix or if it just has to be done that often.
Okay. It's this kind of question is not going to move us from first base to second base. We have to go figure out the problem first, and then we can answer the question. So you don't want us chasing our tails. Now, both of us looked at one another that you changed the fluid and the filter and fixed this because that's something that doesn't – we're not that lucky.
Yeah, not often does that happen.
Yeah, and then to have it come back and stuff, obviously the thing would be is if you want to change the filter and fluid, go ahead. The only thing – I can think of is if we had a lot of trash in the fluid, the first fluid, a lot of clutch material or dirt, or if he's out four wheeling or whatever, then we've changed the fluid and the filter. Now we'll catch a lot of that trash again, and we're not going to stick the valve. But it sounds like his lockup converter's locked up.
That's what it sounds like to me. Because so when you come to a stop, you said it. You described it as coming to a stop in a manual transmission without stepping on the clutch.
Exactly.
And that's a torque converter lockup's problem. So
it usually does it when it's cold. Okay. So after I've been driving it for a while, because I travel for work, I travel all over the U.S., when the engine's warmed up and I've been driving for a while, it doesn't do it.
Okay. This has been a Chevrolet, a General Motors product for 100 years on some of the older cars where they would come, they'd get off the freeway, the TCC torque converter clutch was locked up, they would come chuck, 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 chuck. Boom, and they'd die. So they'd start it up, and as soon as they moved 10 feet, it would die again because it's locked in fifth gear. So then they kept starting it, shutting off, starting it, and then pretty soon it unlocked. So what we would do is disconnect the TCC, the torque converter lockup harness at the transmission, and then we'd say, go drive it. And they'd come back, and they'd say, never happened since you unplugged it. Okay, good. We're going to plug it back in. Yep, it happened again. Bingo. We know what to do. So in your particular case, it's probably going to be the same thing. You've got a converter that's locked up that's not unlocking. But as far as why, I don't know. Where do you live?
Well, I live in Texas. I'm out here in Phoenix working right now.
Okay. If you've got a pencil handy, I want you to call A&S Transmissions. A&S Transmissions and talk to Alger. Actually, A&S stands for Automatic and Standard, but his name is Alger. And tell him, Mark Salem says that there's no way in God's green earth you know what's the matter with this, but he told me to call you anyway. Because he's one of two guys in this valley, and he does only wholesale work. So he's going to probably not take your car in unless you go through a local shop. But he's the smartest guy I've ever met in my life, him and one other guy. They're young, and they're young bucks, and they know more about transmissions than I know about cars. I'm a mechanical guy, and they're a tranny guy, so that's where I'd go. All right, you had a second problem.
Yeah, so it's kind of embarrassing. I was changing the spark plug on this truck. I started to, and you've got the ignition coils up on the upper bank. So when I went to take it off, it pulled apart, so basically the part that goes over the plug just completely disintegrated.
That's called the boot. Okay, you got the coil, the boot, and the spark plug. Yeah, you just go buy a couple more boots.
Okay, so what happened was when I went to put it back on, I was barely, I really wasn't torquing on it much, and I snapped that screw off in the cover right there. Okay, that holds the ignition.
Big piece of duct tape over the top of that coil will be just fine.
Okay, I didn't know if it would cause permanent damage or if it's something I should change or...
Eddie?
No, you're fine. It's... Just something to keep the coil from just rattling out of there is going to be fine.
I've got a cable tie around it right now.
That's good enough.
That's fine. Just check it every once in a while because the engine heat will cause it to be brittle. But, yes, that bolt just keeps the coil from wiggling a little bit. A tie is going to be fine. You broke the bolt off. If it were my truck, I wouldn't dig the bolt out. I wouldn't drill it and tap it. I wouldn't do any of that kind of stuff. I wouldn't waste my time. Would you?
No, and a lot of times it goes from bad to worse.
Oh yeah!
You try to get the bolt on next, and then you got to replace the cover or the intake or something because it just
a really small screw too.
Yeah, and you know you could. There's a lot of things you could do. He could take put a big wad of silicone there, use his plastic tie, and hold that thing down until the silicone got harder, and that'd be it.
Yeah.
All right.
Shall I go to change it again? Yeah, I appreciate it.
Okay, good enough. There's a guy that actually admitted he screwed his truck up.
That's
when was the last time we had that? Anyway, John, don't go anywhere. I promise you I'm going to get you first, but I'm going to have to take a break for about 2 minutes, 45 seconds. We'll be back. Friday. Welcome back, everybody. 42 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm going to go real quick to S&S Tire Service. There's 3 S&S Tire Services in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the most comprehensive line of tires that you can imagine. So you can pull in there with your vehicle. They'll look at the size, and they'll give you 3 prices, good, better, best. You can pick which one matches you. They can balance your tires. They do alignments. They do suspension work. And it's run by an organization of 2 brothers that really and truly I wish they worked for me. They're honest, they're dependable, and they know their craft. So if you're in the West Side, S&S Tire and Auto Service has been open since 1976, and they have 3 locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Doug, or John? John, how are you today, John? What can I do for you?
Hey, Mark, love your show, and want to call, especially when Eddie was in the house there with the Ford guru.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I have a newer 2017 Mustang GT with only 1,600 miles on it, and the sync, you know, the Ford sync system.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've only owned it that very little time, and it's gone out on me like 4 or 5 times, and it just completely freezes. And it's not the upgraded model with the nav and all that; just the standard one. And took it to the dealer. And they just did a master reset, which all that meant was, you know, unplugging the battery for half an hour.
Right, just a reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's happened to me again, so I just kept doing it at home. But I called and said, you know, this is kind of ridiculous. It keeps happening to me. And they're like, we're going to have to pull out the dash and do a bunch of work. And I really wasn't wanting to have that done with such a new car. And I was
like, I want to ask you a couple questions. Sync is the ability to talk to the cloud. It's sync is the ability to let Ford look at your codes. Sync is the ability to sync you with the cloud. So if you have an accident, the airbag's deployed, sync knows where you're at, and they're going to call the police and the ambulance for you. That's what we're talking about, so everybody else knows it.
Right, and you hook your phone through it, too. I think it accesses your phone.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So my question to you is why do you care about sync? What is it on the marketing side that you like?
You know, it's none of that stuff, Mark. It's as simple as I just the radio, and that goes out. I can't even listen to the radio. I can't put a CD in, nothing.
Okay. Because I don't want any of that in my car because they're selling that information to insurance companies. And just recently this guy came out and said his insurance company called him and said, your wife's driving, you know, 2 more miles than you said she would a year, so we're going to raise your premium. And he said, where'd you get that information? And they said, we bought it from you, the guy that sold you your car, the manufacturer. And so because this guy had an application and had a membership with the company that General Motors is OnStar, Ford is Sync, and Chrysler is something else. So you have no choice but to stick with them if your radio is tied to that. You have no choice. This is their problem to fix. And unfortunately, I'm going to stick up for Ford once because this happens to Chevys and Fords and Hondas and Toyotas where they have a problem that takes them a while to figure out what's the matter.
Right.
And especially if there's only 12 people in the United States that have it, it's going to take a while to figure it out. But there might come a time where you can file at the Better Business Bureau or other places for a lemon law issue and have them buy your car back. You're going to have to pay the mileage on the car that you've got it, which is, you said it's minimal, $1,600. But you have to give them plenty of opportunities to fix it. But we've not dealt with that at all.
No, and I can understand his trepidation. A brand new car, and it doesn't want someone going in there and pulling the dash apart to where, you know, is it going to be back the same as it was as it came from the factory? I can totally understand that.
That's right. That's right. And that's where you write it down and you just say, this is what I told you then. I have a piece of paper right here. I don't want any dash rattles. I don't want any other problems. I don't want you to go in and fix one and create 4. I need your most senior guy on this, and then I need you to keep your word as far as the time frame is concerned because I'm sure they're going in there and replacing a big harness and all the connections to it and whatever box it runs. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you have no choice. You have to deal with them. But the good news is this. They'll fix it someday. The bad news is you're not the only one in your Ford. The Chevys, the Dodges, the Toyotas, the Hondas, they have the same problem. Okay?
Thanks, guys.
You bet, John. Thank you very much. Judy, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah. Hi, Mark. I have a taillight that somebody must have backed into me.
only damage is really to the taillight. It's a Ford Expedition.
Uh-huh.
And it's 2001. I got one price. I thought it was really steep. It was $175 just to replace it.
Okay, now is $175 the part and the labor?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I tell me what you think.
Well, I'm thinking that's probably a dealer part, but there are aftermarket companies that make those taillight assemblies that are I've seen them. They look the same quality to me, but they're much less expensive.
Okay, but the labor's the same, whether you plug in a one that has in a Ford box and whether you plug in one of the others. What's she going to save on the turnaround from $175?
Oh, going with an aftermarket?
Yeah.
I would say she'd probably cut that in half.
Okay, and I wouldn't give her that much. I would say that she's probably going to save $50, maybe a little bit more, but not much. So the answer to your question is you can probably do better by going with an aftermarket part. It will work well. It will serve you good. It'll just cost you less money. Or if the path of least resistance is yes on the 175. To be honest with you, if she would have turned that question around and said, I have a taillight assembly that I need to have replaced. There's no body damage. It's, so it's plug and play. Take it out, put it in. I would have guessed between $200 and $250. I wouldn't have guessed $175. I would just think that the part at the Ford dealer is going to be a lot more than that. So I'm kind of surprised at the $175.
That was at the Ford dealer.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the answer to your what part of town do you live in?
Well, the thing is, I live on the west side of Scottsdale, but I'd be happy to drive 10, 12 miles to be able to save some money.
I want you just to call a couple of body shops up and down Scottsdale Road, independent body shops, and just say to them, I want to give you the information. Would you just call me back with the price for the taillight assembly on the and I want you to talk about the driver's side or the passenger side. Don't do left and right. Driver's side or passenger side. Here's the taillight. Do you need the VIN? Would you call me back with an estimate? I think you'll do just fine that way. The time it takes you on the phone will probably save you at least $50, and if Eddie's right, it's going to be $75.
Right.
Okay?
Well, that's great. And, hey, you guys helped me last week. Remember, I couldn't my car kept having stalling out on me, and it was just a loose wire. You said get in touch with whoever you got the battery from. It was AAA. Uh-huh. They came out, tightened it, no cost.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. The problem with the story is that AAA's in the battery selling business. And I watched them the other day in a parking lot in a city I won't describe. And I had already looked at the car, and when you hit the key, the headlights just dimmed slightly and came back on, which means it's not a battery.
Okay.
It's got a starter or solenoid problem. And he didn't even do any testing. He pulled up, yanked your battery, put a new battery in, and drove off. There was no testing whatsoever. That kind of concerned me. Because I think we're in that movement, and I can't speak for them. This is only one example I'm giving you. I just saw them come in and go out, and that person didn't appear to have a choice. I would have wished they would have jump-started her and let her pick where she wanted to go, but that didn't happen. But I just stood there and kind of watched and pretended like I was a farmer looking at them.
Innocent bystander.
Innocent bystander. But anyway, thank you very much, Judy. All righty. I want to tell you about Air Park Auto, which is in North Scottsdale. And Air Park Auto has been around for a very long time. And Air Park Auto is run by Nadine. Now, Nadine and Stacy opened Air Park Auto more than 20 years ago, but Stacy passed away. But Nadine, rather than sell the shop, says, I can handle this. I've been around Stacy all my life, and I know what to do. So if you're a lady and you live in North Scottsdale and you want to deal with a company that's run, an auto repair shop that's run and owned and operated by a lady, then I would suggest Air Park Auto. They're just off Hayden. It's on Raintree. So it's just about 4 or 5 blocks south of Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard on Hayden, and you go east on Raintree, and it's Air Park Auto on your right-hand side. They have all the tools. They have all the knowledge. They have the staff to treat you fairly. So it's diagnosis, estimate, repair, and verify that your repair fixed the symptom, and that's how Air Park Auto does it. Okay, Bob, you're up next. How are you, Bob?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2002 Chevy S10 Blazer with 207,000 miles, and Monday morning it started making a cold knock when I started. I'm going to start it right now and let you listen to it, so stand by. Now it wasn't doing it. It sounds good now. It did it the last 5 days. I started in the morning. It sounded like a rod knock. like a lower end, like kind of a heavy knock sound, you know.
And how long does it last?
The first day it did it like 10 or 15 seconds, and I thought maybe it was just because of the colder weather. But then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it spent like over a minute until I started driving. And like the engine got warmed up, and then it went away, and I never had any problems. And when I started at work in the afternoon, it did it a little bit.
Okay.
Are you sure this is an engine knock and not an exhaust leak?
Yeah, because it changed with the rev of the engine. Like when I rev the engine, you could hear da-da-da-da-da-da speed up.
But
with the RPM.
It's an exhaust leak does the same. And you know what I'm thinking?
What?
Broken flex plate. How many times have... I got to tell you something. We learned early. In the 80s, we bid an engine that needed to be replaced because we had a rod knock. We were convinced. And the guy came back. He was nice. And he said, I had a fix for $250. And he brought us the broken flex plate. And we were embarrassed.
Yep.
We were really embarrassed. But, boy, we learned at that point that that's something you always check. So 207 or 207,000 miles on an S10, it's going to have a four-cylinder or that V6 4.3. And why wouldn't a flex plate cause exactly the same noise?
And I would think what you do is, if it's making the noise in park, put it in reverse and see if the noise changes. Put it in drive and see if the noise changes. Because then you're loading the flex plate. And if there is a crack in the flex plate, there should be some audible difference.
Change. Right. We're looking for change. Okay? The exhaust leak is really good. And if it was a rod knock, he could disconnect the spark plugs one at a time every single time he knows it's going to happen. And once we take the spark away from a bad rod... it's going to change the noise.
Right, it should diminish it.
Exactly.
Quite a bit.
So those are kinds of things that he can do. If that's what you want to do, you've got all those options. But I would certainly pull the dust cover off that front of that transmission. And you have to have a seasoned eye to be able to tell if it's cracked.
Yes.
You have to know where they crack, and you have to be able to see them, because it's not going to just be a big Grand Canyon kind of crack in the flex plate. The flex plate, by the way, is the flywheel for an automatic transmission. It's called a flex plate, but it's really the big round plate that bolts to the transmission that connects to the engine, and it has the starter teeth all the way around it. So the flex plate would be my guess. I know he's adamant that it's a rod knock, but I can't think that a rod knock's going to go away. If we've got a bad bearing, it's not going to go away. It may be diminished, but it's not going to really go away.
Right. And then, I mean, typically, we get some cars that we change the oil on high-mile cars, and when we start them up, they may make a little bit of a knock for 2 seconds until we get the oil pressure back up where it should be.
Right. So it's just there's too many other options.
Yes.
That's the end
of
the
day. I wouldn't hang my hat on a rod knock at this point.
Yeah. 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 Don't go bidding a motor, because that might not be a good idea. Okay. Harker's Automotive. Talk about a diagnostician. You're talking about Bob. I sent him a guy with the Dodge truck the other day. Nobody else could fix it. He calls me back and he goes, I had a bad connection at the bus. I said, how'd you get there? And he goes, I'm not going to tell you.
Was this the short bus?
So a bus is a communication device, very much like a train station, where a whole bunch of stuff comes in, a bunch of information comes in.
Yeah, the depot,
thank you. And so he said, I had a bad connection at the bus. And I said, yeah, I want to know where. And he goes, am I going to tell you? And I said, okay, fine, I'm going to tell everybody that you're going to work on their car for free. So Larry Harker's Auto is on 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen run it. Bob runs the shop. Ellen runs the front counter. Auto, electrical, work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance. They can do all that. They can do emission testing. They can do air conditioning. They do foreign and domestic. They do it all. But Bob, the guy in the shop, really knows his stuff. I think he's a lot better than I've ever been when it comes to tenacity. There'll be a time I'm going to give up. Bob, there's no such time. So if you've got one of those stories that starts off with, I've had my car to so many places and nobody can fix this, then you need to say that to Bob at Larry Harker's Auto Repair.
2 minutes.
38th Avenue and Indian School.
Tom is your next caller.
Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning. I was going to ask you, we were talking earlier about one of those heater removal deals, rip the dashboard out.
Yes.
Is there a website or something that would give a degree of difficulty? I know I like to dig into things, but obviously I don't want to be over the top and choke to death on a job.
Well, I agree. I know what you're saying. On a 1 to 10 scale, you want to stay away from the 7s, the 8s, the 9s, and the 10s, and anything south of the 7. There's plenty of places on the Internet that you can go to bid a repair.
And when they bid the repair, they're going to try to give you parts and labor. And when you look at the labor side, it's usually going to be associated. They're going to ask you what the labor rate you think of your area is. So if you plug in 115 or 120, then you can divide that by the hours and figure out how many hours it has.
1 minute.
I think it's in your best interest to stay away from the 6s, 7s, 8s, and 9s, and 10s. I think the 1 through 5s are certainly within capabilities of many of the people that we know. But when you start talking about 6 through 10, you're talking about stuff that's going to start at 6, 7, 8 hours and go all the way to 20 hours.
Right. And a lot of times, if you haven't done it before or you don't have a step-by-step process of how to remove it, the backyard mechanic will take off more things than what needs to be taken off. And you don't want to get to the situation where you've got it halfway out and you're stuck.
Lost. Yeah.
And then you try, you know, you call shops and say, I got my dash halfway out. Can you guys put it back in? And you're going to be hard-pressed to find someone that's going to take that job on.
Yeah, it's called a basket case. It's bring us your car and your parts in a shopping cart and want us to put it together. We're going to charge you the entire amount out and in because we're going to have to put it back together after you took it apart. All righty, Mark at MarkSalem.com. You got more questions, just email me, Mark at MarkSalem.com. See you next Saturday.